This is Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Chuck Hinman, filling in for the vacationing Ian Donis on Political Roundtable. We're joined, as usual, by URI political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hi, Maureen.
Good morning.
Our political analyst, Scott McKay, is also vacationing this week, and filling in for him on our panel is Associated Press reporter Erica Nadowski. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you.
And our guest this week, Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Chuck.
Well, in the news this week, the chairman of Rhode Island's Democratic Party, David Caprio, resigned after Channel 10 reported that the state police were investigating his receipt of a state contract to manage some concessions at three state beaches. On the face of it, this looks like another one of those Rhode Island is corrupt stories. What do we know about the story here and the state police investigation? Is there any possible criminality? What do you think, Erica?
We don't know a lot at this point about exactly where the state police investigation is going to lead. We don't know exactly what the potential wrongdoing might have been here, if any. I think it raises a lot of questions. It certainly comes at an extremely bad time in the political cycle with 6 weeks to go before the primary. It raises a question of should elected officials and top party officials be allowed and awarded contracts?
Well, my understanding is that as far as the ethics rules are concerned, that there are regulations that stipulate that they shouldn't be a party to state contracts. So I think it's an ethical violation. I'm not sure how much further it goes, except that it looks bad and it's, another inside deal.
And does that have a political implication here?
No, I think in this environment, particularly with Ken Block running as the outsider, the non-politician, and really making a case for this insider kind of way we do politics, attacking Alan Fong, but also attacking the Democrats, I think he's going to try to work hard to get mileage out of this and say we need a change, and he's the guy to change things.
I do think, though, that everybody's getting mileage out of it. All the candidates are jumping on this for the same purposes.
I think we could also see Clay Pell jump on this. He also has run as wanting to end cronyism and this kind of corrupt perception we have here. It's not just a perception, actually, and we might see Clay Pell get some mileage on this, too.
So if it benefits anyone, I guess it's going to be the outsiders.
Yeah, I mean, if you can call Clay Pell an outsider, being the grandson of a former senator from Rhode Island, there's no cronyism, but there's a little nepotism. I do think that it's ironic almost that we need to turn possibly to really wealthy candidates who can self-fund and don't need to make money from state contracts to clean the state up. It's been a tradition, I think, in Rhode Island and a lot of other states. So it's a grand irony in this day and age of populist campaigning.
On the subject again of sexual abuse on campus, given pending federal legislation, which we're seeing now, and Brown University's handling of past and present instances of allegations of such abuse, I'm wondering what it's like for college and university administrations now having to come up with the policies to deal with this problem while being criticized from both sides, usually. And we have some academics with us this morning. So, Wendy, do you want to take that one on?
No, I think it's a very important issue. I think the Congress is passing bipartisan legislation on this, pushing schools to do things that are more out in the open, more transparent. And clearly, if there's a criminal act, then you have to turn over to the criminal authorities, the local police. And I think there's been a reticence to do that on a lot of campuses around the country. But that's got to change. And I think the pressure is going to be too much for universities to withstand that. And they're going to have to turn these things over to the authorities immediately whenever there's any suspicion of any kind of crime.
Maureen?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a very awkward system. And one thing I'm clear on is that I don't think internally that administrations have the capacity to do this kind of investigation. A political science professor, an English literature professor, sits and decides the character of sexual misconduct. I don't think that's appropriate at all. Faster connection with the criminal justice system is one big step. And I think that will go a long way towards, alleviating some of the pressure when it comes to accusations and when it comes to actually indictments. I mean, I really think we really have to turn this over to the proper authorities. Rape is a felony. If someone was murdered, you wouldn't have an internal investigation.
What does the federal legislation that is on the table now mandate?
Well, you know, it's a bipartisan bill, so it doesn't really mandate anything because Republicans and Democrats disagree on mandates. But it basically requires, I believe, institutions receiving federal funds to follow some guidelines on this.
Or risk losing that money.
Right, or having some sort of sanction.
On Tuesday, the gubernatorial candidates in Rhode Island appeared at a forum sponsored by the Rhode Island Black Business Coalition. It's another debate. Did we learn anything from them about this event that we hadn't seen before? Erica, you were there. Any winners or losers from Tuesday night?
I don't think we learned anything extremely surprising, extremely new. We're going to start to see many more forums. We've seen them all line up on stage multiple times. This event raised some new pointed questions having to do with minorities, racial disparities, how the candidates might address those disparities in terms of joblessness, in terms of everything from joblessness to health. We didn't hear a lot of specifics from the candidates. We sort of heard them recycle a lot of their campaign slogans and platforms. I would have personally liked to see them dig a little bit deeper. I do think it was a well-run forum, but we're not at this point learning a lot new from the candidates.
How about the audience? I know there were questions taken from the audience. Did people get their questions answered, do you think?
People did submit questions. There were some on the candidates' positions on the unaccompanied immigrant children, though we've heard that question before at different forums. We are hearing them address questions, but they're sticking pretty closely to the lines that they've developed over the last couple of months on the campaign, and nobody's really breaking out in any particular way that I can see.
How about voter ID? Was that much of a topic that people seem to care about? Because I know there are some differences there.
Voter ID, you could tell the audience was split on it. The candidates were also split on it. The difficult thing in this race is that a lot of the Democrats agree on many, many things. All of the Democrats, the leading Democrats at least, want to repeal the voter ID. The two Republicans support voter ID. The audience was split on it. But this is going to be a race where personalities and their approach, the way they approach things, not necessarily their policy positions, because they agree on so many things. That's what people are looking at.
One of the interesting things about that is one of the drivers of the voter ID law was concern among the Black community that they were kind of being overwhelmed by Latinos. So that's why you get that split in the audience, because many feel as if this is a protection because the Latinos have been very aggressive and active, and they were feeling kind of overwhelmed. Don't forget, Harold Metz, as well as Gordon Fox, sponsored that legislation.
Go ahead, Wendy.
We're not hearing enough specifics, I think, about how, particularly economically, they're going to get the state back on their feet and paying for it. I mean, we're hearing a lot of really good sounding things, but we don't have a lot of the details on how we're going to finance a lot of these job training and boosting job growth. And I think we need to push harder to get those specifics before both the primary and the general election.
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of statements about, well, we can find $2 million in the budget here and $4 million in the budget there. But after a while, that adds up. And I do agree we have to push on that.
How are we going to do that?
I mean, Ken Block has made some outlines, and some of the candidates have. When Angel Tavares was talking about pre-K, he talked about how he felt that he could pay for that, too. But I think it's up to the media and people that ask the questions to press harder in terms of specifically tell us how you intend to pay for this.
There's an outcry on Federal Hill now over violence, drunken disturbances, that kind of thing, centered on the $3 bar. Board of Licenses closed that bar while considering revoking the liquor license. Is this going to turn into any kind of political storm that might affect the elections coming up?
I think one way that it could be interesting is we're starting to hear a lot about crime and violence in the city of Providence, and the mayoral candidates are really pushing on that as they run to succeed Angel Tavares. How that sticks, and if it sticks to the mayor in terms of his gubernatorial run, Gina Raimondo is certainly trying to make that an issue in terms of how many shootings there have been here. And the mayor has said violent crime is down, but if you don't feel safe in the city, it doesn't matter if violent crime is down. And so we'll see how that sticks, if it does stick, on the campaign trail.
I think that's interesting because I think that is a point. I mean, it has the potential to hurt Angel Tavares because he is the mayor. And, you know, you can't be the mayor of a city like Providence and not have this sort of thing happen. But at this time, I think it creates a problem for him if he doesn't get on top of it.
We are out of time. And I want to thank you, Maureen, and Erica Nadowski from the Associated Press, and also Wendy Schiller. Brown University political science professor. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
We're funded by our listeners and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.